Hey guys, I just wanted to let you know that this podcast is presented by mybookie.ag and that if you use the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, that you will get a 50% deposit bonus on your first deposit. And given that you are a listener to this podcast, I would assume you're relatively knowledgeable about sports, and I would trust you to try your edge on the online sportsbook. You can lay down some money and get in on the action at one of the safest online sportsbooks in the world. It's the only one that I am currently using. You can wager on all sorts of different outcomes on mybookie.ag, soccer, football, any major league, esports. You can even create your own player props, which is useful for me because if you know anything about me, I do enjoy a good player prop. So if you deposit using the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, you get a 50% bonus when you deposit. And I will add this for listeners of the TakeCast. If you deposit using the promo code MATTEK and you send proof of it to me on Twitter, I will follow you on Twitter and you can have access to me via DMs whenever you want. That's the TakeCast bonus that I'm adding in association with the mybookie.ag deposit bonus. Now let's get back to the show. Hello everyone and welcome to the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. This episode features the one and only Adam Levitan. This is a conversation about DFS, about poker, about Adam's brand and how he's built it, how much information it takes Adam to, you know, be Adam Levitan, to run that Twitter account, to be involved with all of the fantasy sites that he does. Adam, of course, does call me a massive donkey when we get into talking about sports betting, and you know what? He's not wrong. I think that this will be one of your guys' favorite episodes, and of course, if you want to support the show, you can leave a rating and review on iTunes, and if you really like the show, you can support us on Patreon at www.patreon.com/TakeCast. If you subscribe to the Patreon, you get at least one bonus pod per week, showdown, specific breakdowns for all of the slates on DraftKings, Thursday Night Football, Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football, all of that good stuff. And after a quick ad, we will get to the show. Daily Roto is a mostly proud sponsor of the TakeCast, a mostly sports podcast. TakeCast listeners can save 10% at Daily Roto with the promo code JANIS, J-A-N-I-S. If you are playing on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto will help you improve your daily fantasy results this fall and save time in the process with lineup optimizers, ownership projections, fantasy projections, premium content, and much more. They have all the good stuff that you want to help you make money at sports betting and daily fantasy. Their new lineup optimizer will let you build optimal GPP teams with stacks based on their projections faster than I can punt money off betting on Peter Uihlein. Sure, you can play the guys that I recommend each week, but shouldn't you also get advice from a proven daily fantasy winner like Drew Dinkmeyer? Yes, I do have better hair than Drew, but I also have his cell phone number, and that makes me a winner almost as much as it makes him a winner of the DraftKings Millionaire Maker. And it's not just fantasy. They have tools to bet on player props, golf matchups, and a customizable NFL game simulator for this fall. Save 10% with promo code JANIS today. All right, everyone, would like to welcome Adam Levitan to the show. You guys definitely know him if you're listening to this show. He's way more internet famous than I am. I would say, Adam, you're probably one of like the top three people that people on Twitter have asked to be on the show. Like, I think that's pretty easily the case.
Yeah, I mean, if you're between the age of like 18 and 35 and you have had no sex or very little sex in the last like 5 years or so, you probably are one of my fans. That's probably the target demographic. So yeah, there's a lot of people out there that are into it for sure.
That's definitely the target demo of this show. We're not appealing to anyone else here on this show. This is maybe the most insular podcast in the history of podcasts because it's not even really about DFS. It's about what it's like to play DFS. Like, we're not even really giving out picks. Like, very rarely is something on this show help someone actually like improve the quality of their life.
Yeah, it's so funny. I was out on Saturday night. My wife's sister came in from Colorado, and my wife is talking and she's saying, yeah, you know, Adam sometimes goes a week or 2 weeks where the only person he sees is me and the kids. you know, and I was thinking to myself, like, yeah, I guess that's true sometimes. But then I was like, I have all these internet friends that I talk to all the time. Like, I'm on Telegram, I'm on WhatsApp, I'm on Slack, I'm on Skype. Like, I'm always talking to people. It just happens to be not in person. So yeah, that's the target demo for sure.
My girlfriend went on vacation, maybe I think about a month ago now, and she was gone for the whole weekend. And in that time frame, I actually think I only spoke to like one other person, like out loud with my voice while she was gone. Which is like, if you really think about that, that's pretty crazy.
I know, man. It's society now. But actually, yeah, when I have time to myself, I actually do like to get out. I guess I don't know. I guess I'd be the opposite. If my wife and kids left, I would actually go out. But it's different, I guess, just a girlfriend or whatever. But yeah, I would probably go out and actually interact with people. I'm more likely to do that then, as I just have more time.
Right. Okay. So something I pretty much like to do with all of the guests who come on the show, especially from the DFS world, is just, how did you get here in this little niche, small space? You know, how did you even decide that you like sports? How did you discover DFS, and when did you decide this was it? This was going to be your career?
You got to use the term career very, very loosely there.
Well, I mean, your career is to be Adam Levitan, the DFS player. So how did that, give me the genesis story?
Yeah, I mean, I think like almost every kid, you said, how did you get to like sports? I mean, everybody I grew up with, all we did was play sports and watch sports and bet on sports and March Madness pools and play fantasy. I mean, this was before the internet even existed, basically. I mean, we were playing fantasy in like 1996, 97, I was in high school. We were sneaking to the library when like the internet first started to like manage our fantasy basketball team. So yeah, everybody that I knew, we just all love sports. That was always it for sure. And like, I don't know, I was just like into sports. I was into writing. I wanted to be a journalism major. I knew that whole time. I was a journalism major at Penn State. Took a couple pretty shitty jobs out of college at Penn State. First one was at a place called the Sports Network right outside of Philadelphia. And then I got fired from there, or quote unquote laid off from there after 4 months. And they were only paying me like, it's really bad to get fired or laid off when they're only paying you like $24,000 a year. I mean, that was pretty, but yeah. And then, so my friend who I met at the Sports Network though, Jordan Ronan, now he covers the Giants for ESPN. I mean, he's just out there killing it for ESPN. Right now, he took a job like a year later at a place called Metro. And Metro was a free daily that was in New York, Boston, and Philly. He was like, hey, you know, you can come, you know, write for me on a freelance basis. So I was basically just playing poker. So I started writing on a freelance basis about the Sixers. And we pitched a fantasy column to the editor. And this was when this was like 2005 or 2006. Fantasy was just getting started, but to be really popular, but I was super, super into it. I mean, I was super into fantasy, season long fantasy. And so we pitched the article.
Season long fantasy, football, basketball, baseball.
Oh, everything. Yeah.
Okay.
All three. And we pitched the article. The editor said yes. And I started writing this weekly fantasy column on like a freelance basis for like $50 an article or something like that. And, I did that for a while. I was still playing poker. And then just like, I was,
well, actually, we should talk about poker before we get into the rest of this, because this is something I have like, this is like a fanhood obsession for me. Like, I'm not good at poker. Mm-hmm. I like to play it, but, you know, I got swept up in the Moneymaker stuff. I played on Full Tilt. I watched, you know, Phil Ivey and all those dudes play at the Nosebleed Games, like online. Like, I was railing those online games. Mm-hmm. So kind of tell me a little bit about how you got into poker and like, were you just like grinding like these gross like Atlantic City casinos? Like, were you a tournament player? What was your poker life like before the DFS life?
Yeah, I was playing poker in high school in like my parents' basement. This was like 1999. This was way before the Moneymaker boom. I kept playing in college. There was like a game I was playing called the Mad Mex game. There was a restaurant at Penn State called Mad Mex, and all like the bartenders and the waiters would play in this game called the Mad Mex game. It was like a it was like a tournament, basically. It was like a small buy-in, but it was fun, and like I used to win it a lot. I mean, it was fun, and we played games with our friends. We used to play a ton of heads up sit and goes in like 2002, 2003, and then once I turned 21 in 2004, started playing at Borgata. Graduated, and I was playing at Borgata like between 500 and 600 hours a year or so, which isn't a ton, but you know, I was playing like 10 hours a week or so, staying over
of tournaments or like
no,
like
oh, this two, was
like 2-5, no limit. Not even no limit then.
Right. I had very little money. I started off playing 6-12 limit hold'em. There was no such thing as a no limit cash game at that time.
Oh my gosh, man, limit hold'em, dude.
Yeah. I was playing 6-12 limit hold'em. Moved up pretty quickly from there. I started playing 10-20 limit hold'em. Moved up and started playing 20-40 limit hold'em. And that's when the no limit game started. And I was like, what in the fuck is this? Like, how do the dealers even know like what you can bet, how to make change? Like, I didn't even think the dealers were capable of dealing a right. no limit game. I had only seen no limit tournaments before, never no limit cash. And I was like, this is stupid. And I kept my head in the sand like an idiot and kept playing limit for a while.
Adam Levitan, the limit hold'em grinder. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. And then finally I switched over and I started playing a lot of mid stakes, 5-10, 10.25, at Borgata and at Parks when it opened here, Harris and Chester, Sugar House, the Taj had good games for a while.
So you were basically Mike McDermott for a little while.
But I wasn't, because 500 to 600 hours a year is not a lot. But yeah, I hated tournaments, kind of like, I don't know. I've changed my mind a little bit about DFS tournaments, but poker tournaments I thought were really, really stupid. And I played some, I had some success. I had a few final tables in some, didn't play a lot of them, and was really lucky actually in hindsight to have a few final tables in some, reasonably big buy-ins. And yeah, I mean, I don't know, man, I was never good. It started to get to the point, there was a point where I was one of the best players in the game without really doing a lot of work, you know, like playing 5-10, 10-10 and making 100 an hour was like for sure one of the best players in the game. And then slowly I was making 60, and then next year I made 30, and the next year I made 20. And I was like, shit, this is not good. I need to do something else, or I need to get a lot better. And I'm not sure I was really capable of getting that much better. So yeah, I have barely played any poker really since I got into DFS a lot, which was like 2014, 2015. I have not played very much poker at all.
So, okay. So there was the poker story. There was the offshoot. So back to fantasy sports. So you're at the Metro, you're writing the fantasy column, and at the same time you're grinding limit hold'em at the Taj or whatever. Yeah. So when does fantasy journalism start to like really take over?
Yeah, so I was doing the article and I was like, I was a fan of RotoWorld, man. I would go to RotoWorld, I was like, holy shit, like this is exactly what I'm looking for, like news with a fantasy spin, written by people who are trying really hard and are following it really close. Like, this is it. I didn't really read the articles that much. I just read the news blurbs. So I was like, man, it'd be really cool to work there. And so I found like some contact page somehow. I don't even remember. And the contact page linked to Greg Rosenthal's email. I sent him an email with some of my samples from the Metro. And at that time there was like no fantasy job, like didn't exist. Like there might've been like three people, like Barry, Greg, and maybe like Andy Behrens, and maybe like Brad Evans. Like that was it for people with like full-time jobs in fantasy. So I was like, man, it's really far-fetched, but I'll send an email to Greg and see what he says. And I didn't get a response for like 4, 5, 6 months, and then just out of the blue I got an email from him, and he was like, hey, sorry I didn't respond for so long, but we always, you know, we need people to do news blurbs, and down the line, maybe you can write some articles if it goes well, but why don't you just do some news blurbs to start, and we'll see how it goes from there. You know, we'll pay you, I think it was $8 an hour to do the news blurbs. And I was like, yeah, you know, let's do it. And that's kind of how the whole fantasy thing started. And then I did that for 5 or 6 years until the whole DFS thing happened. And that was when like my whole life changed. And really anybody, I think, in the fantasy spaces, that's when like everything changed for sure.
So were you like a fairly early adopter of DFS? Because like some people would be surprised how late some of the people that they now follow for DFS like actually started like registering for accounts and playing. Like some people, you know, didn't start playing until like some people legit didn't start playing until after the Ethan stuff, like, which is crazy.
Right. No, I was not an early adopter. The crazy thing is the people at RotoWorld came to me, like the bosses like came to me and they were like, hey, we have this new game called Snapdraft. And this was before FanDuel was even invented. And I looked at it, like they knew that like I played poker or whatever. They thought that like I might be into it. And I looked at it and I was like, like the rake was so massive, like literally unbeatable. Like people bitch about the rake now. The rake was so massive, and it was like this game that like I didn't think people could beat. So I was like, this is stupid. And this was in like 2011. I never thought about it again. And then it popped back up as FanDuel and RotoWorld did a deal. RotoWorld and NBC did a deal with FanDuel in 2014, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's when I started to think about it again. I started playing seriously in NBA of 2014. And then, yeah, you know, have been playing ever since then. So, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not an early adopter. I mean, when did the first DFS game start? I mean, I know.
I don't even know the answer.
Probably like 2012 or 2013. I'm sure that's when, like, I remember like Peter told me a story one time, like he was playing on DFS and he already, after playing for a while, he realized what RotoWorld was. He was like, I didn't realize that like you could go to a site and like find injury news on players. Like they were just like playing blind. You know what I mean? Like it's so crazy. But yeah, I didn't start playing until like NBA of 2014.
Do you know if there's anywhere on my FanDuel account I can go see when my account was created?
I mean, you can try to get into your history on FanDuel and look back.
No, I mean, no, I would be doing that next year.
Yeah, it's there. Yeah.
There's so history. I actually think I started playing, I must have been way earlier now than I realized, because I know I was playing on FanDuel in 2013. Mm-hmm. I was playing NBA and NHL in 2013. Like I was playing before the football season even started, which is crazy. To think about, because like I don't even necessarily consider myself an early adopter, but like I guess I'm so old in DFS that I remember when FanDuel had a chat room. Mm-hmm. Like people don't even know there was a chat room in the lobby on FanDuel.
Yeah, people conducted themselves in a very professional manner in that chat room.
Yeah, no one would ever type Blake Griffin is out, Blake Griffin is out, Blake Griffin is out, time after time to try and get like it was like that was the legit wild wild west. Were you around to play on like draft day and daily joust and like, because people don't know, there used to be like, before DK and FanDuel really monopolized everything, really there were like 8 sites you could play on kind of on any given night, and like the prize pools were not so massive that there were reasons to play on these other sites.
Mm-hmm. No, I never did. I never played on any of the small sites, and I was always a bit skeptical even with poker. Like I know people bitch all the time, like you know, I was playing on XYZ shady fantasy site and it went under and they took my money. Yeah, well, like you went to XYZ shady site because you thought you were like going to get over on everybody and like kill all the fish on there because there's no good players on the site. Like, come on, you were trying to benefit yourself and you took a risk and it went bad. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, I always try to stay on the popular sites. I think it makes me feel better for security, I would say.
I stay on DraftKings just because it's absolutely the easiest possible thing for me. Their mobile app works great. I can create head-to-heads when I'm driving or walking the dog or whatever. Like the ease of use of DraftKings and the fact that they have all the soccer games. I mean, I don't think I would, like, I don't even really have money on FanDuel. When I want to enter games on FanDuel, I just use my FanDuel points that I've been saving up since I was like a broke college kid. So I like don't even ever have to deposit there.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like credit to DK, like a lot of people in the industry thought they had no chance of ever overtaking FanDuel, you know, like people don't realize it was like such an underdog situation.
It would be like, I'm trying to think of like two US corporate, it would kind of be like Ethereum flipping over Bitcoin. That's like the best example, which is not a popular conversation to have right now, but that's like really actually what it would be. Like DK was seen as like a competitor, but very like DK kind of used to be more in that smaller site range. Mm-hmm. Like even like in like 2014, it was more like they were more competing with Draft Day than they were with FanDuel then.
Yeah. No, exactly. I mean, people thought it would never flip. I mean, people thought FanDuel just had it on lock. So yeah, it's been crazy for sure.
Okay. So big thing that we talk about on this show is branding and finding a niche and creating content. So I actually don't know a ton about your sort of conscious choice to become Adam Levitan, the guy that is on the DK Solo show and has the Twitter profile. And I'm kind of wondering, you know, first of all, what your decision-making process is with branding stuff. And also, do you have any like, you know, kind of specific insights or anything, you know, in brand management or entrepreneurship or whatever, when it comes to working online in this space?
Yeah. I mean, I have so many thoughts on this. For me, it was like subconscious, you know. I thought that I would just give the information. I mean, like at the very simply, I play a lot of DFS. And so I tweet things, I give people information on things that I find while I'm researching for my own slates, period. Like, that's it. Like, that is the core of the brand. Like, I'm playing reasonably high stakes. I'm trying really, really hard to win. And these are the things that I found that are interesting that you guys need to know. That's it. Like, a total goal would be, which would obviously never happen, but a total goal would be, like, if you're playing DFS, NFL, you can't win without following me on Twitter. Like, that would be the brand, right? So the brand is not picking. The brand is not, you know, giving people advice, not start sit, not season long bullshit, not NFL. It's information that you need to win at NFL DFS, right? And at some level, I think the brand is like trying really hard to win. I mean, like, there's tons of accounts.
It's a good brand to have. Yeah. I admire it. It's way more fun than being a donkey.
I know. And like, it's like there's so many accounts out there that are just like trying to give people picks or sell them something without ever giving them any value. You know?
Without ever giving them even a hook, really.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, so for me, when I send a tweet, I'm like, is this going to help people win in DFS? Or is this like something I found funny about like sex or dogs or whatever? But mostly it's do I think this tweet is something that people playing NFL DFS on DK need to know. And like, if I stick to that in that like super niche thing, and I'm really, really, really a huge proponent of being in a niche space, then it's a tweet to send that's within the brand. So it's not that conscious. It's just like, simply, I'm trying to win. Here's what I found. That's it. You know what I mean?
I mean, I think that is a conscious choice though, because I would assume a lot of the people that play even like mid to high stakes, like people who are getting off more than $500 in NFL a weekend, I would assume a lot of those people are not actively trying to share. Like, they're probably like, I mean, I think that group of player doesn't want to share that much information, like, especially when you get in the bigger games. Like really, if you've ever posted a 109 head-to-head, the chances of you wanting to give away information, I feel like, are very low. Like, I feel like you and Dink and Leone are kind of like the group of guys who play in the bigger games who are willing to give away stuff that certainly is an edge.
So I think it goes both ways, right? Like, I've been posting up to 2K head-to-head on DraftKings this year, and I haven't my games have not been taken by anybody who I mean,
people are just so bad at NFL. Like, that's a real thing. Like, people make really suboptimal choices.
But I can tell by their lineups that they're just not listening to me. They're not following me on Twitter. You know what I mean? So I think it goes both ways. Like, a lot of the good people, like, whether they think I'm good or not, at least they know I'm trying, right? So like, why would they take my game if they know that I'm actually trying? You know what I mean? Like, you can get plenty of action against people that legit aren't even trying. And also, you know, to that, like, if you think about it from a bigger perspective, the upside, and this is something I didn't really understand early in my life, and I had Cal Spears on my podcast, and he understood it better than anybody. Like, when I first found out about poker, I was like, oh, shit, this is awesome. I'm going to just play poker, and I'm going to be rich. Like, actually, no, I'm not.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
What would have made me rich is, like, starting a poker site or starting Card Runners or starting Upswing Poker. You know what I mean? Like, that would have actually made me rich. So with DFS, I made a conscious effort to be like, I'm not – playing is great. I'm never going to get rich playing. Like, I've talked on my podcast a ton about what a realistic win rate is, what realistic ROIs are, not screenshot life that people show, like actually realistic stuff.
You mean that just because you post a screenshot of a 200K night, that doesn't mean that you made $200,000 the last year playing DFS?
Yeah, exactly. I have a lot of theorems I've explored about people. There's a strong correlation between number of screenshots posted and how much of a net loser you are for the entire year. But anyways, that's a different conversation. I think that the ceiling in business and is always going to be higher than playing, right? So like, yeah, you know, you can make 50K, you can make 100K. It's going to start to get really hard to make more than that, just straight playing DFS, you know, 150, 200. It's going to be really hard to make that much just straight playing DFS. The ceiling on business side is infinite, particularly with the way the space is now with sports betting. I mean, like, the ceiling is a thousand times what it is playing now.
The ceiling the ceiling on being a brand in DFS right now, like honestly, it's higher than unless you're literally like you're grinding the absolute highest stakes of DFS. Like there's more money to be made in the business than there is to be made in the game. So I don't even know if that's disputable.
Right. And like people rip on Osimo and, you know, Peter or whatever for starting sites and like quote unquote giving away information. Like they just don't get it. I mean, they just don't understand like the ceiling on stuff like Sahil site or whatever, you know, like all these people, like to me, like it's a no brainer decision.
It's not even something that you should think about. Like unless you are legitimately making you'd probably have to be making over $1 million a year playing DFS to like be like, oh, I have no interest in being in the business of DFS.
And I mean, there's definitely some honor in just straight playing, you know, like you're an old school gambler, like you just straight play. And I have a ton of respect for people that do that, but I still
I don't care about that at all. I don't, because I think it's totally possible to be a grinder and to help other people find the information. Because I actually do find a lot of like joy in the teaching and in like the communication with people who like do well based off of your research and stuff. Like I actually think that in and of itself is pretty rewarding.
Yeah. So I think when people ask me like, what do you do with DraftKings? Like, what's your deal with DraftKings? I always say like, my deal with DraftKings is to help their players like not become roadkill, like not just go out there and get absolutely trucked. Like my articles aren't for people playing 10Ks and 5Ks. It's for the people playing like $10 to have a chance. Like it's not good for DraftKings business to have people sign up for the site.
And just get wrecked.
It just gets wrecked, right? It's terrible for DraftKings business. You know what I mean? So my deal, I think the purpose of my deal with them is to help their players win. And I think I've done that reasonably well, like helping people get better, helping people understand game selection, helping people understand how to make a roster, give people the information they need in one place to make teams. And so, to your point, I for sure think that that's a big part of it. Like it's good to help people at low stakes not get absolutely trucked. I don't feel great when people who are like, if there's anybody out there, you know, playing like the Thunderdome and like taking my advice, like that's not what's intended for whatsoever.
It's not what it's intended for, and those people, like people who are getting that much in action, have more sophisticated systems to build lineups and stuff. Like that's just true.
Yeah. Exactly.
So yeah, and I think that's like reasonable. And I actually think your stuff probably is more interesting to those people than like the general type of content that I put out. Cause I feel very similar to you. Like I just kind of want to help people not get trucked, or even better, just enjoy playing DFS and enjoy watching sports. Like that's my biggest thing, is I just like, especially football, like I just love football. I think it's like just this really unique thing in like all of society.
Would you watch football if there was no money on it whatsoever?
I wouldn't watch anything.
Right.
I really love golf. Like golf is one of my favorite activities. I really like tennis, but like, I just can't. Like what's the point?
So you don't love football. You love DFS football.
I more think that I really love, in general, I really like games where you're trying to predict the outcome of something based off of percentages. It's the same reason I really liked poker. I was never as good at poker as I at least perceive myself to be at DFS, but football is like, I watched a lot of football growing up without having any money on it. I just think that it's more like something that snapped in my brain of being like, you know, after all this time of only watching it with money on the line, watching it now without it would just be weird.
Yeah. At this point in my life, there's just so many more important things to me than watching like the Redskins play the Eagles with no money on it or no interest in it other than to see, you know, great athletes play on a football field. Like I would not interest me whatsoever.
No, I mean, can you remember the last time you watched sports without having like any interest, financial interest?
Not really. I mean, even like Penn State football, I don't even watch. Yeah.
Okay. I do that. I do watch OU football every week, even although my interest in it is now up way more now that DK added college football.
Yeah. 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 I get that. Like, I think there's something about college sports that's really cool because like these kids weren't drafted to the program. They chose to go to the same school, just like you. It's obviously a little bit different, but like I chose to go to Penn State. They chose in some fashion to go to Penn State where they were getting like bribed by hookers or whatever, sure, who knows, right. But yeah, I mean, we share the same thing. We eat at the same restaurant. It's so different than like a guy who gets drafted or takes the money to come play for the Eagles or whatever, you know, it's totally different. Doesn't
yeah. I don't care. I do not care about the Cowboys at all really anymore. They just does not emotionally move the needle for me much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they played on Thanksgiving and like I was much more interested in like having Amari Cooper and all my captain lineups than I was like them winning that game against Washington. Oh,
yeah. Amari Cooper and captain, how rich.
That was that saved the Thanksgiving slate, man. It would have been a poor Thanksgiving for your boy. I played Jordan Howard in main slate cash.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was not great.
I played Michael Thomas over Julio, so it wasn't that great for me either.
Okay, so actually, this is a good question. How much do you use or like rely on projections for NFL? Like in NBA, you can't win without using good projections. I don't know if there's anyone out there that would argue that, but I think there is a good and meaningful argument that just relying on median projections for NFL is actually like maybe not that good.
Yeah, I like to get a pool of players that I think are good plays, and I will use projections in an effort to get to that pool when it's pretty large. And then from there, I don't use projections at all when I narrow my pool to who I actually want to play, because on a lot of guys, median projection is irrelevant. Like so much of it depends on how the game goes, et cetera, et cetera. Like Drew Brees could have 25 attempts or 45 attempts, depending on how well the Falcons play on offense. You know what I mean? And like, it's really hard to bake that into a projection. Football is just so wide in terms of what can happen. And that's why, you know, you mentioned basketball. Like to me, we can be so precise in our NBA projections. In NFL, it's just so, so wide. And I think there's so much more to it. A game environment to me is so important. And what I mean by that is just like, does this game have a chance to be an offensive explosion back and forth? Weather, all that stuff, like, does it set up well for fantasy scoring? And then I think there's some things that are also hard to bake into matchups that maybe there's a lot of feel, man. I think, you know, if you're just doing straight median projection optimizing, I'm pretty sure you're going to lose.
It's so true that NFL is like a feel game. Like it, and people really hate to, like, especially like higher stakes people really do, that's not something they would ever probably care to admit or talk about, but I've never been like, I am so certain that that is true.
So I've gotten into a couple of debates with some high stake guys, Wiggins and AE Jones. There was a time like the Cardinals offense was just like drawing stone dead earlier this year. And like DraftKings made David Johnson like 5,500. And I totally agree that from a projection standpoint, from a usage standpoint,
right,
like David Johnson was underpriced for sure. A strong value. I was still never playing
David Johnson. Yeah. I haven't played David Johnson once this year.
Right. So to me, like that's the feel that goes into it just because, and you know, David Johnson may have had a good game that day. I don't remember, but like, I still think that
it was against the Vikings and he scored, yeah, but he was still not like, I think he got 14.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, I think like, so if David Johnson was 6,200, like nobody ever would have played him. But at 5,500, all of a sudden he looks like a really great play. And in football, like I think that the range is wider than that salary gap. Like the range of outcomes is wider than that salary gap. And like, I thought he was so much likely to hit the bottom of his range that you couldn't really account for. So yeah, stuff like that I think is a good example of feel versus just straight projections.
I actually find it to be most useful with pass catchers, just to like kind of have a sense of like, oh, this is a spot that this guy does well, instead of like trying to project out every single last target or like arguing about the difference between what a 15% target share or a 20% target share would do to a median projection. Like, I just kind of think it's better to be like a great case of this was Josh Reynolds. When Josh Reynolds filled in that first game for Cooper Kupp, I kind of thought like, this may not be the best spot because they don't know how long Cooper Kupp is going to be out. Maybe they just kind of use the tight ends and they kind of eliminate that role from the offense. But that second game, I was like, well, he played 50 snaps. And a Rams wide receiver that plays that many snaps, like, they're just not going to be bad. And that was a guy who, and he actually saw a price increase. So I like had a lot of him in tournaments that week, but like that not that I'm not even trying. I'm sure there's 100 cases where I got the exact opposite wrong. It was like, oh, actually this is a great example. You know, who's always looks good in median projections, Golden Tate on the Lions. Mm-hmm. Just every week he'd be like 6,500. And when you ran optimal lineups, he would be in it. And I'm just like, I'm never playing you, just because the downside with the Lions is they might just run 45 plays because Matt Stafford brings the clock down to that every time. And that's something that's not going to show up in a median projection. Like, do you have any guy like that, that you're just like, this guy's in optimals and I know I just am never playing him?
Yeah, I know. I've talked to a few people. Jarvis Landry has cost them 5-6 figures this year.
Oh, never. Never. Yeah. He's bad.
And I played him a couple of times early in the year, and then I was like, the value of his target is so low, and I think his catchable target rate like was so bad. So not only are his target count actually inflated, so his target share gets inflated in projections. A lot of these are uncatchable balls, and then the value of his target is just like such dust. And then now we have Baker Mayfield just like throwing the ball to 9 different guys, and I'm not sure that projections have accounted for that fully yet. So yeah, I mean, I think there's for sure feel, and like these are the small edges as the games get tougher. Like these are the small edges that you are going to, I think, have to be on to be a winner, I think.
Oh, this is actually the best question. Do defenses matter?
So I agree with him on a lot of what he's saying. He just took it way too far to say that.
I mean, that's the classic Frisco Josh thing. It's just he loves to stir it up. And I actually agree with him more than I agree with all the people who were like, this dude, he doesn't play DFS. He doesn't know anything.
Right. It doesn't matter if he doesn't play DFS as long as he's not like making like lineup recommendations. I my favorite people wouldn't play DFS. I think, so you couldn't tell me, it just doesn't make any sense that if James Conner played the Falcons 100 times and he played, the Ravens 100 times, that he'd end up with the same score, the same average score. It's just literally impossible. So to that end, you can't say defense doesn't matter when that's just like 100% true. What you can say is that when Nick Mullins plays the Bucks, well, yeah, it doesn't really matter because like Nick Mullins fucking sucks, right?
Right.
So like he could easily fail despite the Bucks. Like it doesn't, the matchup doesn't matter that much. But yeah, I think that to say that it doesn't matter at all is silly, and to say that matchups is all that matters is silly too. As with most things in life, it's somewhere in between.
I think like one of the big edges actually that analysis has helped me find is just play guys in perceived bad matchups. Like just play good players against teams that like James Conner against the Ravens. That was a play I made like a bunch in tournaments. And it was just like, I mean, just makes sense that like this dude's getting all of this work and his upper range. Like, I don't think in a bad matchup like last year's Jaguars or this year's Ravens, I don't think the 90th percentile changes. I think what changes in those matchups is the median projection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that makes sense. Yeah, I mean,
like if a team is gonna score points, because even teams with good defenses, like sometimes it just ends up you get in a shootout. Like these teams get in high scoring games. It does happen.
Yeah, the thing is, like, if you're only playing 1 or 3 lineups in GPPs or something like that, like, I'd still be hard-pressed to play, like, I don't know, like, even, like, good white, like, Antonio Brown against the Jaguars. I know he can go off, but, like, it's just, like, so much more. Like, maybe that's why I haven't had success in GPPs.
But like, I think right there what you're speaking to is an edge. Because Antonio Brown, given the rules and the context of the NFL now, just had like he's got a huge edge over Jalen Ramsey, because Jalen Ramsey's not really allowed to do anything to him except try and get in front of the ball before it gets to him.
Right. No, for sure. People have been winning like that a long time. I just mean, I don't think people who play a lot of GPPs like understand the variance. Or at least the people who are winning at them do. Like the fish that are playing a ton of GPPs, they're like, oh, well, I'm going to play Antonio Brown against the Jaguars this weekend. I'm going to win. They don't realize that, like, yeah, that's a positive expectation in the long run, but it could take you a literal year of losing to realize that expectation when you're playing, like, really high variance stuff.
The way that GPP content is given to people is they're like, oh, you just got to play the guys at 5% and you'll just win.
Yeah, and it's so ridiculous. Like, and I really try to steer people away from that when I – do my stuff, because I don't want people to lose for if you're playing optimally, you really might lose for like, I'm not even exaggerating, like a month, 2 months straight of playing every slate before you hit something really big. And you know what I mean? And that's not fun for a lot of people. That's not they'll quit before that, you know?
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing. People, like, unless you are so good that you can just give people the 3% guy who's going to smash every week. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I don't know if you're doing a service.
No, you can't. Nobody can. If they had that, they'd have a printing press on their hands.
Right. So how are you adjusting to sports betting being added into our world? Like, is it something you're familiar with? Do you have a good bet story? Do you have like a good, like you hit like some sick thing when you were younger?
No, I'm a sick fish. Look, here's the problem with sports betting. For me, I said before, my brand is winning. Or at least trying to win, right?
A lot harder to win at sports betting than it is to win at DFS.
People don't understand. It's like infinitely harder. There might be 100 people on earth actually winning at sports betting.
Maybe 100.
And like all these clowns, like, oh, my NBA package went 9-0 last night. Subscribe here. Like, please let me sit on your action. Please, please give me your action and let me sit on it at minus 110. If anybody's thinks they can beat sides at minus 110, I'm happy to sit on it. You know, like, it's just crazy. So it's a hard thing for me to think about. I actually haven't like thought it through enough yet to the point where I would like even do content about sports betting that isn't information based, because like, I don't know, man, like I don't want to be involved in something like everybody's going to lose at, you know? I don't know. Like, it's the DFS is just so much more interesting to me. It's so much deeper. You're playing against somebody else. We can certainly outsmart the average person out there, or at least try to, just by outworking them. It's just not going to happen in sports betting. So it's a tough thing for me.
You have some moral quandaries here.
Yeah. And like, sport betting on games is fun. Like, I tell people all the time.
Like, that's my thing, is like, I actually think that even like, and I think it's possible to be like if I was going to tell someone like, look, you're gonna go out at about a 48% clip. So over the year, you're gonna lose, like, let's say your unit is $25, you'll lose, I don't even know what the math would be, you'll lose $1,000, but you're gonna have some nights where you have a lot of fun. You're gonna have like a couple big money line winners that are like really fun, where it was an upset, but you are gonna lose some money. I think like a decent amount of people would sign up just for that like awesome experience.
I think deep down they have to think that maybe it's possible they could win, because I think that's a huge part of it. But yeah, I mean, the point I want to make about sports betting that I'm not sure people understand is like, the lines are so efficient that no matter how much research you do, how much work you put in, you're almost certainly going to fall in like the 48 to 52% range. Like, your win rate is going to be like, no matter how bad you are, my dog could pick over an infinite sample. My dog could pick at 50% flat because the lines are so efficient. Like, it's hard for me to say, hey, I'm going to put this stuff out there and going to help people win. Now, I do think that if you can get to lines early enough, there's ways to win.
That's the key. The key for me in NFL. So like, I'm in this Fantasy Pros accuracy challenge for betting over unders and against the spread. And I'm at 62% over about 70 picks, which is like that. And
that's
60.
Insane. Yeah.
62% is good. Like, that's very high.
It's insane.
And the reason that I'm not out here being like, you know, I'm not Davis the Greek or whatever. This is not me pounding my chest, but it's like, I pick my games on Tuesday before the lines have had a ton, like, and if you know the games and you can kind of just think in your head, like, this line seems off. Even if you end up being wrong, I think there's value in just getting the number before it moves.
Yeah. For sure, 100%. If you can beat closing lines, you're winning. You know what I mean? Like, and people ask, how do you know if you're good at sports betting? Are you beating the closing line? Period. Like, that would be a good way.
Yeah.
To know, particularly like sharp books like Chris or Pinnacle or whatever. If you're beating the closing lines on those sites, you'd be winning. So yeah, man. I mean, sports betting thing is tough. I just hope people realize how hard it is. You know, they think that DFS is hard. You know, and like, wait until they try to win it at sports betting. So one thing I do think, though, that I will do is player props. I mean, we can
100%. Yeah, player props are the smash.
We can 100% beat them. It's easy to move from a DFS player to a player prop. Better. It's hard to scale because, like, sites aren't going to let you bet a lot. But for a lot of people, like, betting player props is for sure the way to go. It's the most fun.
And a lot of people doing sports betting, they're not trying to get 10K down on, like, Antonio Brown's reception prop. Like, it's a more natural transition.
Exactly. And it's fun. And yeah, I'm 100% going to do something with that. I'm not sure what it is yet, but yeah, I think that's an awesome thing to do for sports betting.
My biggest advice for sports betting is, the first is, if you have a line or a situation where you're like, this is the spot that I feel 100% confident, do not empty the clip. Like, because there's like nothing worse. Like, so what I did last year was, the Warriors fell behind the Rockets 3-2, and I moved all my Bitcoin from my hard wallet onto an offshore sports book, and I put it on the Warriors, because I was just like, the Warriors are going to win the NBA championship. They're not going to lose to Houston. And so like, and that's not, I'm over the long term, I'm not a overall winning player, but like, when I have that confidence rate, I empty the clip. Do you think that's bad advice?
I mean, define empty the clip. Like, how much of your actual life roll?
Oh, I mean, 5%.
Yeah, 5% is probably okay. I mean, you could look at Kelly and figure it out. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. It's probably not the best thing to do 5%. But I don't know.
5% is probably rich. We'll say 1%.
Okay, that's definitely fine.
Just I in the more specific advice is, if a line is bad, like, and you genuinely have some sort of like numerical analysis to suggest that a line is bad or inefficient, like, do not be scared to bet it, but don't bet games that you don't have a feel on.
Why? What made you think that the line was wrong? I mean, that's one of the most widely bet lines out there. Why was that line bad?
Just because I think that the Warriors, and specifically this version of the Warriors with Kevin Durant and with Steve Kerr as their coach, have proven to me enough times that regardless of the scenario that they're in, they just should not ever be underdogs. Like, it took one of the most absurd and contrived sequences in NBA Finals history to let the Cavaliers beat them.
Yeah. I don't disagree, but I would think that line is pretty efficient. The NBA series prices, you know what I mean?
Oh, I would assume that's a very liquid line, and I would assume that they probably got the exact action that they wanted on it. But I want to be in a scenario where I'm getting my money in on Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, and Steve Kerr. And like, it was more, I guess, like, I think if you told me in January of 2017, you can get the Warriors to win the NBA Finals at plus money, I think I probably would have like taken out a loan. And I think that maybe like the minutia of the situation of like watching them choke that game five away, I think kind of led to that line being different.
Yeah. I can't condone this thought process, Davis. I'm sorry.
I'm good knowing that like I got lucky, because I think it's fine to get lucky sometimes.
No, I'm not saying that maybe your opinion yields like a small edge, but I'm very confident that the line was mathematically correct.
I'm confident the line was mathematically correct too. I think like in all of the algorithms or whatever, like whatever. I actually don't know a ton about how NBA lines are made. Do you?
Not really, but I'm sure it's math based and then let the market push it around, you know?
Just yeah, because NFL lines are done a lot on like yards per play, like mm-hmm. both sides. That's like really what goes in it. But I don't actually know what like the fundamental element of an NBA line.
Yeah, I don't know. No idea.
So maybe my thought process was wrong. Maybe I just got outed for being a big donkey on my own podcast, which is fine. It's fine to be a big donkey.
Essentially what you said is you emptied the clip on like a gut feeling, which I wouldn't recommend anybody ever.
Wow, I did. What a loser. I'm okay with it. And you know what? Bitcoin is worth like absolute pennies now anyway, so it wouldn't have mattered. Okay, so what are your content consumption habits? Like what kind of media are you taking in? Are you do you not consume a ton of sports stuff and do like Netflix, or are you trying to get more sports information? Like what are you like in terms of your content consumption?
Yeah, not that much. I try not to read or listen to anything before I work on all my stuff, just because I want to have like some lot of my own opinion. After I'm done with my own stuff for the week, I certainly like to read Evan's column. I listened to Greg Cosell on John Hansen's podcast, which they do every week just to get like a film watcher's perspective of how things are going, like an actual film watcher. Outside of that, I don't consume much content at all. I don't watch much TV. I listen to Stern. That's about it, man. I'm I'm not, I don't, I maybe should be looking at more people's stuff, but like most people's opinions are like so irrelevant to me.
They're just opinions. Like for DFS stuff, like I would much rather be presented with data as opposed to like, this is what I think.
Of course. So like, there's some people out there that are writing like really data heavy articles, and I do like that, and I do respect that, but still, like, I'd prefer to trust myself. So in a lot of situations, so I don't know, man. Like, yeah, I don't know. Should I be what should I be watching? I have no idea.
I mean, I'm big on like trying to like disconnect from sports when possible, just because I spend so much of my like waking time processing it, thinking about it. Like, it's very like good and clearing to like consume like fiction books or like watch like cooking shows on Netflix or whatever. Like, that is like, that's a very good like separation period for me to like just get away from being like, man, Xavier Rhodes's play has really fallen off this last like month or whatever, you know?
Yeah, for me, I'm always connected because I'm always on news, right? Like, I'm always trying to be on top of the news. So like, I have push alerts on my phone for Fantasy Labs NFL.
Everyone, if you play NBA DFS and you don't have the Labs account giving the stuff to you, like, what are you even doing? Yeah.
And I have RotoWorld too, and I have Schefter and Rapsheet. So like, my phone's constantly going off with information. So I like never really disconnect, but I'm not like thinking about Xavier Rhodes' play. I'm thinking about like, oh shit, this guy's in the concussion protocol. Like, what do I need to do? You know what I mean? So from that perspective, I guess I don't disconnect ever, which it's probably not the best for life health, I would say, most likely.
Does your wife ever give you a hard time about it?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's like, yeah, I'm on my phone too much, 100%, but like, I'm not fucking scrolling through Facebook and shit. Like, I'm actually looking for information that I need. So like, it's hard for people to separate between like, I'm scrolling through Instagram looking at like what Susie did last night versus actually looking for information or registering for games, or I don't know, you know, who knows. So yeah, it's definitely a hard thing for sure. And I'm always telling myself I'm going to get better about not being on my phone in front of my kids and stuff like that. It's just a horrible example for them too, but I just need information, man. I just like, the quest for information is just too strong.
You're the information junkie.
That is true. I can't stop. Cause once you fall behind, like, then I'm just like out of it. I'm like, God, what is going on? If I take like even a day off, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so lost.
I mean, that's what, coming back from, I didn't play NBA really much over the Thanksgiving time at all. And I came back and played last night, and I was just like, what? Like, especially in NBA, it gets crazy. Like, some like G League dude will like all of a sudden be playing 32 minutes a night for some team. And you're like, how is this guy showing up in optimals right now? Like, you'd roll up and you'd see Trier for the Knicks, like in an optimal lineup. You'd be like, I literally don't know who this dude is.
Yeah. And people ask me why I don't play NBA during NFL, and it sucks. I love NBA. It's my favorite sport. It's my favorite sport to play. DFS, I just can't. It's just too much. I can't keep up with the information and keep up with NFL at the same time. It's just too much. So I just decided not to play.
So you're just not getting action in like 3 out of the days of the week?
Correct.
Yeah. Doesn't that like, don't you kind of fiend for it?
No, I have regrets because I think NBA at this time of year is like insanely profitable if you're trying really hard and you know what you're doing.
It's like, if a donkey like me can win, imagine how good you'd be doing.
No, and yeah, that's the regret, but not playing certain nights. No, I just like, I have so much I'm doing with content and NFL and stuff that I don't really miss it. When I'm done for the day, I'm just like, it's time to go to sleep, not to sweat stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So something pretty unique about you is that you actually like, just, you just publish the results of your NFL cash games. Like, not just in the sense of like what your score was, but like, this was how I did in my head to heads, and not like exact dollar amounts. But I mean, I think people can kind of, you know, they can kind of figure out how your season's been going.
Yeah.
So first question, what made you decide to do that transparency? And then generally, do you get positive feedback from that? Like, let's say you had a losing week, like you just got crushed, right? Mm-hmm. Like, are people like, oh, you're such a sick donkey, I can't believe people listen to your picks? Or are people like, we'll get them next week, dude?
I'll answer the second part first. The overwhelmingly, people are like, wow, you know, thanks so much for doing this. This helps me a lot. This is really cool. Et cetera, et cetera. There's every now and again, I mean, people who just don't get it are just like, oh, how could you play James Conner over Christian McCaffrey? Like, you're an idiot. How'd you not play Cam Brate? He was a lock. And you know, I don't respond to
this. How did you play Conner over McCaffrey, you sick donkey?
I thought they were actually really close, and I thought there was they were
so close. Like, yeah. I played McCaffrey, and a couple of my buddies played Conner, and before Locke, I was just like, I mean, it's like 2 or 3 points different or whatever. Like, I actually don't think it was that bad.
So in hindsight, just like Pittsburgh on the road in a tough environment, their floor is way lower than McCaffrey with his pass game role.
Right. Like, McCaffrey has the floor for sure. Yeah.
And so it should have been an easy play, but I was obsessed with trying to get Austin Eckler in if Melvin sat. So I was like, I'll play the late slate guy. But anyways, too much strat there. The guys that, like, when I post my lineup, like, I guess these guys don't realize, like, they think I'm a sick fish. Like, let's play. Like, I'm in the lobby. Like, you can play me anytime. You know what I mean? Like, right. And that's just like, so that gives me a lot of confidence just to be like, I'll put this out there. If I lose, maybe I'll get good action from these people who think I'm a donkey. You know what I mean? And I think that's true. I mean, I sell so many more head to heads than other people that I know. And I think
I post like 50 at like most of the dollar levels, and like they all get taken.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, so there's that. Why did I want to do it? So when I like came up with like this content plan for the guys at DK, I just thought, like, what would I like to read as a player? So to me, like, review is super important. It's super interesting to see what somebody who's like trying really hard, whether they won or lost, what their thoughts were as they were making their lineup. Like, it's just interesting. I think it's just like an article that I would want to read. So I said I was going to do it. It sucks to write that article when I win like 4% of my head to heads.
It's just like, well, I played CJ Uzoma again, and he got 15 targets.
It sucks to write it, and like, but I think it's somewhat therapeutic too. And like, I've heard a lot of poker coaches talk about this, like their results and their game is better when they're coaching or whatever, because they're thinking about it, you know, and they're like thinking really hard about mistakes that they made and their thought process that went into it. You can't just be like, fuck it, I ran bad, that's it, you know, like that's just like the easy way, cop out, lazy way out. Like, no, I didn't ran bad, I fucking suck, you know. So so I think it's what I would want to read, and that's all my articles on DK playbook or whatever. It's just like, hey, this is what I think, what I would want to read if I was playing.
Yeah, we do the lineup review show on RG Sunday night, me and two of the other guys from the old Fantasy Insiders days. And I won't lie, like, when I'm making my cash game lineup on Sunday morning, I'm like, if this goes bad, what am I going to say on the podcast tonight? I'm like, what am I going to say about playing Theo Riddick in cash? Like, and what, like, you really got to process it if you're putting your lineup out there for everybody.
Yeah. How can you defend this?
Right. And like, well, man, Theo Riddick, he ran really hot to get to 8 2 weeks ago. Like, that's all I can say about that play.
Yeah, it is what it is, though, man. I mean, when DraftKings salary cap is tight, like, you're gonna have to play some shitty plays. Like, that's what people don't understand. They're like, how could you play?
Yeah, you gotta play some thin guys on DK these days.
Yeah, how could you play Ricky Seals Jones? How could you play Vernon Davis?
Like, oh, Ricky Seals air yards, you mean?
Yeah, it's just like those people who say that, they don't understand the context of the slate, right? Like, they just don't get it. So that doesn't bother me if they just don't get it. It just is what it is.
So the thing that I was going to end on was asking how you choose to disconnect when you do, but I don't know if you have an answer for me. You may need like some Zen Buddhism or something in your life, man.
Yeah, no, I work on my self health when it's not football season. There's like a state park around here. I take Jerry, my dog, too, and we go run around out there for a while. I like that. I mean, I exercise when it's not football season. I do all these exercise bets that I've had a lot of fun with. I did the mile race that I trained a lot for. Did the tennis prop bet against Bass, the frying pan bet.
Oh, yeah, that was an elite one.
Yeah, so, I mean, I like doing all that stuff when it's not the season. It's just during the season I'm super connected. When it's not the season, I'm really not. It's not the same whatsoever.
What's your go-to Postmates order during the football season?
I use I think the place we have here is called Try Caviar. Same thing, right? You're talking about food delivery.
Yeah.
So they do all the best restaurants, man. Like, there's this Korean place I really like. I get this good bibimbap that comes. There's this place that has a good Greek salad with blackened chicken that I really like. place called Square Pie here that has like Chicago style pizza that comes. But I order food so much, it's crazy. I mean, I'm ordering food like twice a day.
Huge fan of, like, in Kansas City, the best one is Postmates, I guess. Like, but I'm just like, I think it's the most brilliant business thing ever. Like, I wonder how much those people make though. Like, how much do the food delivery people actually make?
Probably not that much. I think they do okay though, but yeah, the people who invent it, it's just like anything else in business, man. Like the workers,
the people who own it are printing.
Of course. The people who own the business print, and the people who are the workers get fucked, you know? It just is what it is.
I actually wonder how much those people make versus Uber drivers. Like, what would be a more profitable way to spend your time driving your car, like Postmates or Uber?
I'd feel way better about Postmates. I'd be so scared if I was an Uber driver, someone was going to get in my car and murder me or something.
No, like, I would not be. I would never. That would be one of the last jobs I would ever choose to do in my whole life.
It seems crazy to me. Everybody's like drunk and it's disgusting.
No, it's not for me, man. All right. Plug. Well, actually, wait, hold on. The one more thing I wanted to talk to you about was, do you see a changing wave in content creation? Do you think that the podcasts and articles model is sustainable for 5 years? Or do you see like a real shift in how people both create and consume content?
So I guess the chalk answer would be everybody is doing live streaming now, right? Is that like, is that the chalk answer?
I think that live streaming is definitely the future, but I think that like, I kind of think it's sort of far away from being like super, super good money, just because there's got to be a better way to get it on your TV. Like your smart TV needs to be able to just load Twitch up like preloaded, and we're not there yet. So like your mom could not watch your stream like in an easy, efficient way.
The appeal to me of podcasts is I put on my phone, I can turn my phone off, and I can listen to it as I'm walking my dog, I'm walking to the office, whatever. Like if I'm sitting at my computer, I don't want Twitch on the other screen like distracting the shit out of me. I'm trying to write, I'm trying to think. You know what I mean? So I don't use it like that. And I know a lot of people do. So that's a hurdle for me. Like if I'm just gonna do a talk show, like if I'm just gonna do my podcast, like why do I need to live stream it? Why can't it just be something that people download and watch whenever they want, when they're doing whatever they want? To me, that's the best way to consume it. Now, if I was doing a show, like I know like Holka and Al and those guys, or I don't even know what they're doing exactly, but like Sunday morning, they're like going through lineup decisions and stuff. That's obviously a total print fest because you're in real time and people are actually making their lineups. Like I can see why people want shows. That makes total sense to me. Just like doing my normal podcast or like talking through my articles or whatever on live stream wouldn't make a lot of sense to me. So I don't know, man. I think podcast is my favorite, but I'm old, man. I mean, I'm 36. The Twitch age is probably a generation below me for sure.
I bet most people would take the under on your age being that. Like they would assume the under. They'd be like, oh, Levitan's 28.
I know. I act like I'm like 19, and you guys can't really see me well here, but or at all. But I look like I'm like 18. So yeah, I mean, yeah.
You're definitely rocking the like 18-year-old out at a mall past the curfew time at the mall look. I would say that's like your general vibe you got going on.
Yeah, man. I just it's bad because like I take my kids to daycare in the morning, you know, without my wife. I mean, I go in there in sweatpants and like I look like this, but worse, you know.
Right. I like and they're just like, oh man, should we even give his kids back to him?
I feel bad. Like they think I'm just like, yeah, everybody else is dropping their kids off in suits and stuff. They like look at me. It's a bad situation for sure. It's embarrassing.
That's a great way to end the show, man. Beautiful. pimp the content. Tell people where to get it.
I don't know, man. If you go to my Twitter at Adam Levitan, all one word, I link to everything I'm working on there. And that's pretty much it, man. You know, obviously, all the written stuff is on DK Playbook. The podcast is at the DFS Edge. The ownership projections, the news are on Fantasy Labs. And yeah, man, but the Twitter is really, if you go to Twitter, it's like, you know, I listened to your podcast with Kevin, the sports geek, and, you know, he was like, he made a good point about email list is kind of irrelevant because, like, in lieu of an email list, I can tell everybody everything that they need to know about me or what I'm working on just with one tweet, you know? So yeah, that's where to go for that.
There you go. And the tweets are good. They are useful. They are actionable. If you follow me on Twitter, you probably have some use for an actionable Twitter account because I very rarely give out the good takes. So go and follow Adam. Thanks very much for joining, man.
All right. Thanks for having me, man.